Would you introduce yourselves, please?
I'm Spencer.
I'm Robert.
Carl.
And you're in a band, I believe, and it is called...
A Silent Film.
I'm going to fill in some blanks. Let's see, 2005, Oxford, somebody was in a previous band, there's something involving Charlie Chaplin.
We've never really fully publicized how obsessed we were with table tennis and how important that was in the early stages of writing, but that is actually true. We had a studio at a house outside Oxford where when we started writing songs for the band, and all we did was write music and play table tennis. I don't think we watched TV in about 3 years. We just played table tennis.
Now, I'm just going to get this over with early because we talked about it off camera, but did you just hate UK winters so darn much that you have to go to the friggin' 110 degrees in the winter deserts of Arizona?
We definitely have a stubborn streak, and when everyone kept saying it, like, honestly, it gets really hot. And we were like, yeah, it's fine. We've got air conditioning. We'll be inside. And I don't know. We've always had this. I don't think we complained about it a little bit, but mainly it was just like stubbing it out, prove everyone wrong who thought that four skinny little Brits wouldn't actually survive.
As far as switching it up creatively as well, go to somewhere that's really going to make you think, somewhere that's really going to switch things up. Because we've written an album in England before, and we ended up in America, and we were just given this great opportunity, so we weren't going to scoff at that one.
So the first album, if I am correct in my research, was released in the UK in 2008, but took 2 years to get here. But this thing comes in, I pop in the single, I'm like a minute in, and I'm like, this is a hit. This is so ready to just go.
Growing up exactly where we grew up, it's specific to where we were, and what I was feeling personally as the lyricist in the band, I quickly realized that I was more inspired by a lot of other people's stories and a lot of other people's journeys than perhaps mine to that point. I hadn't experienced a big load of stuff, so I felt that my small life experience was not enough to engage and to inspire other people. So I started to dream in stories and try and dream bigger and make up these things that perhaps I'd learned just through passing, through films, through poetry and stuff, and actually try and put it into music that maybe it might inspire somebody else.
Comparison genres, yeah, okay. I've had Keane on the show. Yes, I've had Killers on the show. I've had both these bands on the show. What I'm more interested in is when you sit down after your thrasher careers and said, we're growing up, we're going to make this band. There must have been some discussion about what you wanted this to be, and it certainly wasn't, well, we want to sound like half the Killers, half like Keane.
Definitely the table tennis feeds in. That this is the table tennis era that we were talking about, and it's like, as far I yeah.
So we're firing back and forth. Yeah, it's about two love, and I'm saying, like, yeah, we cannot make imitative art. That is the biggest problem. That is the danger area. Is when bands are imitative of other bands. The joy is to draw inspiration from something that's true. Be that a personal relationship, be that family, be that love, be that art, poetry, film, or at the very least, music. And the idea is to be inspired to make it, not to make it out of some kind of just like teenage dream of being a musician and being imitative of something that you once admired. It's to grow up and realize that if you want people to respond to your music, you must be able to inspire and be inspired.
Let's talk about the fact that these really are songs, and you take the time to figure out what that means. And what the result of that is that they also work in other places, like getting syncs on television, because songs work there, because they carry along a narrative. So you got a narrative carrying along a narrative, right?
Yeah, we definitely, I think Oxford is it's such a kind of cool place to make music when you were growing up, because it's a really ambitious scene. You know, we've got that little Radiohead band, you know, who everyone kind of was pretty into, and they're sitting there on your shoulder, and you're like, you've got to keep doing better and being better. And it meant that the Oxford scene, you don't get any bands really that sound necessarily like normal bands. There's a lot of really quite outrageous experimental stuff, and we love that. We love the experimental side of things, but we were always drawn to this idea of the song, and I think that's where we ended up carving our niche in Oxford. Was just, it was about the song, and we loved the sounds, but we were always going to make them serve the song rather than the other way around.
Yeah, and you did make some decisions here, because this is not, even though there's guitar in this band, this is not a guitar-driven band.
I remember us talking about the idea when we started this, right at the beginning, we were talking about, we wanted to do a thing where each instrument had its own voice, and it meant we just, that's why we never saw ourselves as a piano band, because we saw ourselves just as there's drums, bass, piano, guitar, vocals, strings, whatever, and they'll each have their own voice and they'll sit in the song, and we wouldn't let our guitarist use power chords for the first 2 years we were playing. I seem to remember he hated us. And it was like, but just to see if we could do it, you know, like.
But from that was very much conceived in a live setting of four people trying to put together those instruments into the sound of a silent film. From that, this record has been much more about creating that one unified picture and making sure that it doesn't sound like four desperate quarters of like, you know, this guy's a drummer, so he writes drums. This guy's a guitarist, so he writes guitar. This guy's a singer, so he writes lyrics. There was a very much shared idea of where the song could go, and everybody served the direction of the song.
I believe we're sitting here on the day of the American release, are we not? And then you're about to do a live show. So people tonight, if they've done their research, have been able to hear more than a couple of tracks. If they haven't, you're playing it for the first time for them.
People have definitely been able to hear the record in various ways. We've also been streaming it ourselves on certain websites, which are great ways to entice people to not download it illegally, to listen to it, to make an informed decision and buy the record. It is a different thing. When I was younger, I used to take the risk on bands because that was the only way, and I loved doing that. But for this day and age, we appreciate it's a different thing. But we implore people, and we really, really appreciate people going out and buying our record.
So Arizona, Texas, and London, that's kind of the mix. So was there a producer who came along to all those places, or was it you and just keeping an eye on the sound, which is what I suspect?
Yep. Self-produced. We're very, very proud of this. We've all cut our teeth learning how we sat on the shoulder of talented people and learned how to make records, how to be creative and use the tools in the studio. And it just started that way, this recording process. The demos became fully fleshed out songs, and we learned a lot doing this, and it's a lot of the way that we run everything in the band. We like to know what's going on around us. We don't like to have people that work for us that tell us what to do or tell us how things are going to be done. We like to just inform and learn and get better at what we do.
When people actually discover that you've done covers like Born Slippy, do they tilt their heads weirdly, or do they connect the dots?
That kind of should fit in with the, that's a great song, like, at the base of it, it was another way of showing that, like, a great song always has a song at its core, and if you know, it should be able to be interpreted in different ways, and we've done that with a few other covers that maybe will be eventually heard or seen, and it's like, yeah, generally, if we love the song, we'll always try and find a way to play it if we think it'll be fun.
When you do this record live, and even the first record live, this is a big record. It's got a big sound.
It's like having a tiger at the tail at the moment. That's what we're feeling like, because the record is it's tough. It's tough to play live, and we've really, really set apart the challenge of trying to deliver it.
We've always known what we wanted to do, and we've always remained fiercely independent. I don't mean that in a label sense. I mean that in a sort of mental and a mental space, and it's like, we've managed to do this on our own, and we're managing to do this on our own bat. And labels for us, it was never a thought of like, we need to go for a major, we need to go for an indie, we need to go outside all of that. We just did what we wanted to do, and we managed to make it work. And to be able to sit here on sort of album release day with an album we're putting out ourselves, and it's, you know, we're really proud of, and we're not beholden to anyone, and there's no one breathing down our neck already trying to push us in any specific direction. It's a really good feeling.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs as the bread and songs by other artists in between.
Genius.